morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how you doing?
Been in zombie land.
Heat and sports mixed together or what?
Yes, everything. When you throw it in the blender, you know, the Walking Dead, yeah. We're the Walking Dead with walkers.
I can understand that. Yeah, long week, and then with the holiday and everything, late nights.
And speaking of home improvement, I had the pleasure, and I did it myself, changing out our pool pump.
There you go. All done.
Wow,
fantastic.
Nice.
And you know, pools are definitely a whole nother show topic to have for real estate. So I'm glad you brought that up. That reminds me to make myself a note. And it's been a couple of years since we had somebody on the show, a pool expert, to really talk about that, because that does take an entire show. So I'm going to put that down. Maybe we try to get somebody in here the next couple of weeks. That's a good thought for sure. With us on the lending side, our in-house lending expert, Mr. Tom Coyne with Umpqua. Tom, how you doing?
Hey Lance, I'm doing pretty good. It's been very busy.
Good.
We're trying to keep everything under control, keep the volumes pushing through, so we're keeping up.
Yeah. Enough of your personal life. What's happening in Umpqua?
Yeah. Very, very good one for sure. No, you guys have been helping a large number of our customers. I know there was a lot of loans that you guys had to really work hard on, and we appreciate you getting that all done. And I know there was even one where I got to say thanks to you, and a shout out to Stuart Title was on the transaction also. And you guys actually came in over the weekend to process that well outside of normal business hours for a bank or a title company. And it was just one of those deals where it meant a lot to our buyer and seller, and it was a big deal in their life. So thanks a lot for really pushing through on some weekend work to get that done for us.
Yeah, you know, no problem. It's this job is really not just 9 to 5. You're working on the weekends,
right.
You're working at night, it's just whatever it takes to get the job done.
Well, thanks a lot. You guys went above and beyond, and we really appreciate it. Well, we always like to start off with our crazy celebrity national story. And so this one kind of grabbed my eye. Pretty interesting. Supermodel Heidi Klum is selling her house in Brentwood Estates. Now, mind you, this house is currently listed at $25 million. She bought the house as a foreclosure in 2010 for $14.2 million. Now, that's quite a foreclosure, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell you what, that gets you 8-bedroom, 10-bath, 12,300-square-foot estate just outside of one of L.A.'s most prestigious neighborhoods. And the place is incredible. It really looks like it's like in the hills of southern France, you know, Mediterranean-style mansion. Really, really incredible. Obviously, she spent millions of dollars fixing it up. But right now, we had the story a couple weeks ago where we had Giselle's and Tom Brady's house sell for $40 million. Right now, these high-end, multi-million dollar estate houses are really bringing a lot of interest in those markets. So there you go. Just a little flip, a little $14 million flip, now back on the market for $25 million. So pretty crazy for sure how that could happen in that market. This week, I really think we came up with a topic that we've never talked about before, and it's come up in the last couple of weeks, and so I wanted to chat about it, and that is, and I think we've briefly covered it, but we've never gone in depth about it. And I don't know if it's real estate folklore or, you know, real estate rumors, but people have always heard about the sappy letter that came with the offer that got the people the house. And so I think not very many people really get to see those that often. It's not like you buy a lot of houses for one, and then on top of that, you're adding in supporting documentation. So I kind of wanted to flip that in this week to talk about not just that as one aspect of it, but the presentation of your offer, how your offer is being presented, how the agents are seeing it, and what that looks like. So from the consumer side, so you know what to expect. So I went back and kind of looked at, you know, my career in real estate and thought back to, okay, offer presentation. How was it just say, let's just go back 10 years. Let's go back to 2004. What did an offer presentation look like in 2004? Well, generally what would happen is you would write up the offer. You would get it signed by your clients. This was most likely all done by hand. And, I mean, that's not that long ago, right? 10 years. And then what would happen is you would take a copy of the offer, and you would then take the originals, and you would take that to the other agent's office. You would call them, set up an appointment. You would physically drive to the other agent's office, and then you would present that offer in person to that agent and go over the terms. That's what happened 10 years ago. Now, if you faxed that offer to that other office and just said, hey, I just faxed you an offer, or you did that 10 years ago, the other agents in the market would think you were lazy, probably not representing your client very well, and really would kind of turn their nose up, and many would get offended by it. That just was not a common accepted practice. It's
incredible how much has changed in that short period of time.
So fast forward to today, and I looked and I thought about it, and I would say out of we've probably at this point in the year, based upon our closings and offers, we've probably had 120 offer presentations to 150 offer presentations to us from other agents, and I've only seen another agent with that offer twice.
Wow.
So what happens so often now, and they've even legally and across the state, the trend, they've had our recent revision to our forms, and we talked about some of those revisions, is that email transmission of those documents as legal delivery has become standard language in the contract, basically following this trend of so often now, those offers are already in your email, they've been signed digitally, and then those offers are then forwarded directly to the other agent. So that's changed a lot and changed tremendously. One of the things, though, that we need to be careful about is lost in translation. Now, was that a movie or something? Or
it was. Okay. Might have been.
Okay, gotcha. So lost in translation of what happens is if an offer is just, you know, blasted out there and sent, but not explained properly, it could really derail a buyer's intentions with a seller. So I kind of wanted to highlight some of the things that happen in that. I mean, a lot of times, I mean, that's become such common practice now because of easeability and speed and, you know, guaranteeing that things were delivered, that happens so often. You know, 85-90% of the time we get those offers via email. Now, the great agents out there in our market, and there's so many of them, are calling us and saying, hey, I just emailed you an offer on XYZ property on 123 Primrose Lane, and I wanted to just go over a couple things with you. You're going to see on page 5, we put in this remark. You know, you're going to see, this is why we offered this. I put supporting comparables in the back so you know where we came up with our price. And they're going to call and have that conversation with you. Now, sometimes what happens is the buyers know that they're in a multiple offer position. They know they're competing against other offers, and they want to. They've seen it on House Hunters International. You know, they've been watching TLC, and they say, we need to put a letter with our offer explaining to the seller why we're the right offer for this house. And so what happens now is you got some work to do. If that's the if that's the strategy you're going to take, there's a couple things you'll want to know. Number one is you want to try to find out as much about the seller as you can. You want to talk to that other listing agent. You want your agent to talk to the listing agent. Find out where the seller's moving to, maybe what their time frames are, if there's any special considerations they might need on their end. Anything you can find out to get into the seller's head, can give you an advantage when crafting your letter. Say through those conversations, you find out that the seller needs 5 extra days to move. You could put some flexibility into your letter that you have the ability to work with somebody in a position if they needed a few extra days. So you can use that as an opportunity to convey to the seller. One example we've had before is we were working with the buyers and we walked through a house and there was just tons of family pictures all over the house. And you could tell that the folks had raised a family there. And we were working with a new couple and they had started their family and had 2 kids, very young kids. And so they wrote a letter explaining that they were looking for a house to raise their family in. They had seen the pictures. And they wanted to have the same experience the seller had had and have those good memories of raising their family in that house. Well, that meant a lot to that seller because they had a connection to them, and it really helped kind of make the difference. Now, let me tell you, though, that the best written letter, now I don't want people to think you can just write a letter and convince a seller, because I'm going to go to the other side of this and talk to some issues about it. The best written letter, though, the best written sappy letter that I have ever seen has come from the buyer's banker. And that letter says that they have the cash in the bank and they can close in 10 days. Okay. That letter is not going to get beaten by the sappy letter.
Right.
I just want to put the warning out there to people that letter trumps most of the other ones that I've seen. And a lot of times we talk about proof of funds. We had a whole show about that last time. But having a letter from a personal banker verifying that somebody can close quickly and the funds are available makes a big, big difference. The next thing we're going to talk about when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about the worst letters I've seen that have actually affected the transaction negatively. And we're going to talk about one of the most important letters to go with your story letter. And that's going to be a letter from Tom Coyne at Umpqua if you're needing any type of financing to get this done. After the break, we're going to talk about some more real estate, a pick 3, and some of the worst letters we've ever seen.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been talking about offer presentations, styles of offers, letters that can go with the offer, some of the nuances of things that we haven't had on the show before. One of the biggest things we talked about is a verification of funds that you have cash to purchase or a pre-approval letter. We're going to get to pre-approval letters. What always happens when we have a big topic like this, and I brought 4 pages of notes, we're going to run out because I'm only going to get to page 2. So most importantly, before we run out of time, I'm going to get a pick 3 in of some property that's out there. And I tell you what, my pick number 1 is just a beautifully built home out in Horn Rapids. It's $2,399 Copperleaf in Horn Rapids. This is a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1,708 square foot home, all on one level, Rambler. Large great room. It has the masonry fireplace, granite counters in the kitchen, stainless steel appliances, tile floors, huge master suite with a walk-in closet, gorgeous master bath. I mean, this place is just completely done up, covered patio, fully fenced, lived in for less than a year, and we're talking $264,900. So that puts you out there in Horn Rapids by the golf course. They're doing some amazing construction out there, beautiful, beautiful homes. Check that one out for sure. Number 2 that we got, opposite side of town, we're going to go from Horn Rapids out towards Finley on Haney Road, 29003 South Haney. This is a 3-bedroom, 3-bath with a bonus room, 2,600 square foot house on 1-acre lot. Spacious kitchen, tile flooring, pantry, dining nook, breakfast bar open to the great room. Master is on the main, which I know a lot of people are looking for. 2,600 square feet. You want the master on the main level. Large private bath, French doors out to your deck, and a fully fenced backyard. You're going to need all of this on an acre, stick built, $236,000.
Wow.
Really fantastic, fantastic deal out there. And then we'll go, let's just go to Pasco. We've been everywhere else. Let's do a pick three out in Pasco, 5401 Truman Lane. Really open floor plan. This is a four-bedroom, three-bath, plus a den. All of that, and a Rambler. 2,552 square foot Rambler, 5401 Truman Lane. Great room with a gas fireplace, formal dining room, large kitchen, huge master suite, and like kind of a separate sitting area within the master. And you got split bedroom design for maximum privacy with boat and RV parking. And I'm going to throw in, just because I'm in such a great mood, I'm going to throw in an instant hot water heater, a Renai-instant hot water heater. Okay, so low maintenance.
Nice.
And it's $215,000. So let's go back. 2,552 square feet with everything we talked about on one level, Rambler, $215,000.
Wow.
That is a fantastic, fantastic deal. So that's our real estate pick three this week. Let's get to the lending side, Tom, and talk about... we've been talking about offer presentation. We it's amazing that we still see offers come without pre-approval letters or evidence of funds, but it happens all the time. So let's talk about what you do on your side to help make that presentation of the offer go better.
You know, Lance, we've talked a lot about why is it so important to get pre-approved when someone plans to purchase a home, and as soon as they plan to purchase it, even if it's 6 months down the road, mainly because it ensures there aren't any surprises that are going to come up down the road, and the client also knows that they've done all the legwork they can to get the best program possible based on their situation. But it also ensures that they have that approval letter handy as soon as they find the house they want to make an offer on it. It makes their offer a lot stronger in the eyes of the seller. And that's especially true when compared to an offer written without a pre-approval letter.
So and let me tell you when you're going to find your house. You're going to find your house at Saturday night at 7:30,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be because it just came on the market or a sign just went up over the weekend. And you're not going to be able to get a hold of anybody.
These bankers do work Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, most of the time.
And there's going to be another offer coming in on the property.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to have your pre-approval letter. You're going to be in multiple offer position, and you just found the perfect house. But keep going. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Definitely important to get that pre-approval out of the way. So even though we talked about why it's so important to get pre-approved, we haven't actually talked too much about the process of getting pre-approved. So I want to go over that today. Now, for most people, it's a lot easier than they would expect. And on most applications, we can finish the approval in less than a day. So the first step is to go to my website, apply online, and that's just www.tomcoinhomeloans.com. Now, the reason I like to have people apply online is for several reasons. One, it's just easier for the client. They can do it at their own pace. Even if they don't finish it all at once, they can come back later and pick up right where they left off, even if it's at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday night. And they go online, they're putting all the information in. It really alleviates typos. Or if we're doing an application on the phone or even in person where I'm inputting the information, you know, that's how a name can get misspelled or a social security number transposed. So when they put the information in, they can see what they're putting in, and that rolls right over to our system. Now, also by doing it online, before we have them come in, I'm able to review their entire financial situation and very quickly be able to identify what is going to be their best option. That way, when the client comes in, we're talking just all about the loan, and we're not sitting there doing data entry, which is just kind of tedious and takes some time. As soon as that application is done and submitted, and it takes the client maybe 5 to 10 minutes at most to fill it out online, we'll call and find out what kind of sales price are they hoping to get, what kind of down payment are they wanting to make, what loan term are they wanting, a 30, or 20, a 15, and then really important, what monthly payment are they trying to stay around. We've talked about this as well in the past. Not all the times does the monthly payment they're expecting line up with what sales price they're hoping to be shopping for.
Right.
So these type of things are different scenarios that we try to identify before we set this appointment. So once we review everything, we review the loan application, we're going to set up a time to have the client come by the office and go through all these different options in person. You can only do so much over the phone, and it's just so important to sit down, meet face-to-face, and really explain the whole process together in the office. It gives the client a better idea what to expect, and it makes sure we're all on the same page. You don't want me to be thinking they're going to go 5% down, and the client's expecting to go 3% down, so this just alleviates any of those things from happening. Now, at the time that they come in, I'm going to give them a list of stuff to bring in. And these are items that we're going to request 90% of the time before we issue an approval letter. And that's 1 month of pay stubs, their last 2 years of tax returns and W-2s, and their last 2 months' bank statements. Now, occasionally, when we're reviewing this documentation face-to-face, additional questions are going to come up. Maybe they put on the application that they make $5,000 a month. But when I'm going through the pay stubs, the year-to-date average is only $4,000 a month. And so we're going to ask those questions and try to find out, hey, what do you really make? Because at the end of the day, the underwriter's not going off of what the client says they make. They're going to go off of what the pay shows they make.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe there's what we call 2106 expenses on tax returns, which are non-reimbursed employee expenses. We see this a lot with union guys where they write off their miles for their jobs, the tools they buy for their jobs. But we have to deduct that out of their income. And sometimes you could see a guy who's making $80,000 a year, which is fantastic, but then they have $20,000 in the expenses, so really they only made $60,000
less. Right, gotcha.
So we're going to go through all these different items that the client brings in and verify we still have an approval, and then at that time we're going to issue the approval letter. Now, I take these approval letters very, very seriously. I know that that's not always the case out there, and Lance, you could probably attest to this more, but I had a real estate agent here not too long ago, and it wasn't certainly not from the Kenmore team, who said, well, can't you just give me an approval letter? Those things don't mean much.
Yeah.
That shows what her belief of what an approval letter means, and I almost kind of laughed at her, and I said, well, I don't know who you work with, but that's not how we run our business here. So
right.
When I give that approval letter, I want to be 100% confident that the client's going to be able to get that loan, and we've built a reputation in town that our approval letters are very strong. Now, I've seen it before where two people put competing offers in on a house, and maybe they're pretty similar, and the seller looks at their agent and says, well, what do you know about these two lenders? And quite often, the person with the better lender, or more maybe reputable lender, is going to get that house. So it's definitely important to go through the pre-approval process so you know exactly what to expect. Okay, want to go over this real quick, because we ran into some challenges this last week, Lance.
Okay.
I've given out the approval letter. You're out shopping for your house. Here's a list of things not to do.
Oh, okay. I'm excited to see this.
Don't open any new accounts.
Gotcha.
Nothing new. Don't go buy a new boat, a truck, no credit cards, nothing. All that can affect your approval. At closing, right before we send loan documents out, we refresh your credit report. And the things we're looking for are new accounts or big changes in balances, which leads me to my next point. Don't have any large expenditures that you charge on credit. That affects your payment, which can affect debt to income, which could affect your approval. The last call you want to get is from your lender 3 days before you're expecting to get keys saying, well, I didn't know about this new beautiful Ford F-150 you just bought, but now we're having issues with your house. Can you sell your truck real quick for us, please?
Right. Or
sell your truck and not your house.
Or I see that you went to the 4th of July weekend sale and bought the stainless steel refrigerator, matching washer and dryer,
yep,
ice maker, and new dishwasher for the house that we're closing on next week, and you put it on a credit account.
and now your utilization ratio is increased, your credit scores are down, your payment's up, all bad stuff.
And we don't have a house now to put all those things into.
So main point I'm trying to get across here is, if there's even a little part of you that says this might cause a problem with the loan, that loan officer or myself is your best friend during this loan transaction. So call them and just say, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. Is this going to be okay? Will this affect me at all?
Yeah.
And they're going to set you straight, make sure you don't run into any issues down the road.
Good work. Good point. I like those a lot, man. Those are great, great reminders, and we've seen them all happen. Mm-hmm. So before the break, I promised, when would the sappy letter to the seller might not be a good idea?
Can't wait to hear this.
And I've seen this happen, and what happened is one time, we've been on the receiving end of these letters, where we get a letter that was a little bit low, with an offer that's a little bit low, and the buyer was needing closing costs paid for. So they wrote in the letter how they really had wanted this house and they'd been looking forever, and they wrote in there why they needed it at this price and why they deserved to have it at this price. Well, I tell you what, the seller was retiring. And so they're trying to maximize the amount of money they're taking into the retirement. They had spent the last 30 years working to pay off this house. They were really offended by the letter. They said nobody paid their closing costs when they bought it. They said they had had hard times also, and it was rough and never easy.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were just completely put off, and that letter actually ruined the rest of the offer. In fact, after they had read that letter, they said, I don't care if it really what the price is in there. I don't even want a counter offer. So, once again, that was the mistake we talked about before the break of knowing where the seller's at, knowing what their situation is and where they're going to, and then drafting your letter accordingly to. This was one of those cases where we just kind of got the letter out of the blue, and a lot of assumptions had been made by the other agent and their client, and it was a big turnoff.
You know, that's a good case that really shows you it's important to have a good relationship with your real estate agent, and more important that they don't have a problem picking up the phone, calling the other agent, and finding out what the scoop is with the seller.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So there are cases where that can backfire, on it. I've also seen cases where it's not very common anymore, but it used to be more common. Because it's not as common anymore, we've had other agents request to present directly to our sellers. Meaning they want to not only bring that offer to me as the seller's agent, they want to set up a meeting where the actual seller is in the room with myself as their agent and with them presenting the offer.
Let's kind of plead the case.
That's exactly what happens. Usually when that happens, there's some sort of mitigating circumstance, maybe a contingent home sale, maybe they're personal friends with the buyer and they know something about their situation. So there's usually some mitigating circumstance that needs to be explained, they feel, in person and cannot effectively be done through the other agent. It is an interesting dynamic when those meetings happen. Generally, there's a little bit of tension there. The seller's not too excited about it. We're there to protect our seller and to help them out and hear through the situation. And so that's just always a case where we're taking that on a case-by-case basis. I've had sellers say, absolutely, I would love to hear what they have to say. I've had sellers say, I'm going to go, but I'm not happy about it. And I've had other sellers say, I don't really care what they're going to tell me, just send me the offer.
Right.
So it's personality based, you know, and it really depends. So we take all of that on a case-by-case basis. So I guess it's what keeps my job interesting. No 2 days are alike, for sure. So those are some of the scenarios. Offer presentation style can make a big difference on your offer being accepted or rejected. We've seen a lot of different styles, some good, some bad, through the last couple of weeks. So I just wanted to review that for our listeners out there. As we wrap up today, big thanks to the listeners. Multiple radio recommendations and referrals that have been sent to us over the last 2 weeks, plus some personal listeners out there that we're currently working with. We just want to say thanks for your business and thanks for your referrals. And enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we'll be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.